Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
And of course, being good metaphysical people that we are, we know that we can't expect respect out from out there, right? We have to respect ourselves first, and then we get the respect that we deserve. So it's an inside job. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about metaphysics. It's never about what's happening in the conditions of our world. It's how we respond to the conditions in our world, yes? And so often we give our power away. And these uppity women of the Bible that we're going to talk about in the next... By the way, let's hear it for uppity women. All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, that sheet thing is absolutely right. If you want to know the power of a woman, try and take the sheet back at night. So true. So true. And that's the thing. We're not just talking about nice little mamby-pamby feminine qualities here, as you'll find out in a bit. This is about the extreme strength and power of women, right? And not just power in a masculine way, like being a bull in a china closet, you know, just going straight ahead, but power that comes from using intuition, using different ways, seemingly soft ways, sort of like a martial arts thing. It's like an open-handed approach, but it's incredibly powerful. It can be more powerful than this approach, right? So, uppity women, they're remarkable in the Bible because the Bible was written by a bunch of men, and at those times, women were second-class, third-class, fourth-class citizens, right? Even today, we could say that women aren't necessarily treated equally in our society. So think about it back then, thousands of years ago, it was way worse. So for the fact that for these women to come forth and be remembered in the Bible is quite remarkable, right? Now here's another thing before we dive into the women I've got lined up here. And next week we'll look at uppity women in the New Testament, by the way. Before I get into it, I want us to realize that the Bible is a weird and wacky book. Okay, we tend to have a glaze. We put a word in front of the Bible when we call it the Holy Bible, right? Well, I don't know when it became the Holy Bible because it's not just, of course it's holy, it's to do with spirit, but it's radically different as well. We tend to put this gloss of holier than thou on it, right? So we see everything through the lens. It's like we make Jesus into this nice little milquetoast Jesus, you know, always meek and mild. Nothing to do with the real Jesus. The real Jesus wasn't meek and mild. He was certainly open and receptive, but he was very strong and powerful. Well, in the same way, the Bible puts in all kinds of crazy stories here to wake us up. And God appears not just to the successful people, but to the strange as well. This is why it's good news for us. To the ordinary people as well, to the disempowered people, right? And so our first person, the first woman, is Rahab. She appears in the book of Joshua, right? And Rahab lived in Jericho, in the promised land, and she was a prostitute. So here's the first uppity woman, is a prostitute. And she lived in, like I say, Jericho, which was the largest city of that area, right? Therefore, it was a bit like New York City. So she was a prostitute in New York City. Into the city come spies of the Jews because they've moved out of Egypt. They've been in the wilderness, and now they're looking to move into the promised land. Now, think about the symbolism here. You've been in the wilderness. You've escaped from utter slavery. You're still in the wilderness wandering around. You're looking for a higher order of things. You send spies. The spies come to Rahab's house, right? She's receptive to them. In fact, when the authorities come after the spies, she hides them upstairs. Says either in the attic or on the roof. And then when the coast is clear late at night, she lets them down from her house by a scarlet thread. and they escape back to the Jewish camp. They, though, tell her, they said, listen, keep this scarlet thread, hang it on the window so that when we come back to destroy everything, we won't destroy you because you helped us out. Okay, metaphysics, please. What does it mean? What the heck does that mean? What are the spies? Now, remember that whenever a Jew is discussed in the Bible or the Israelites, because they wrote the Bible, they always wrote the good bits about them. The highest spiritual bits are always the Jews, right? Everybody else is kind of lower. So if we understand it metaphysically, whenever there's a Jew, or even a spy of the Jews, that represents spirit, where everything else represents the ego or humanness. So the spirit comes into a power place, a place of power where we are selling ourselves short, maybe, right? Is that an image of the prostitute? We have love, but we're selling our love for money, yeah? So have we ever prostituted ourselves? It's not just about whores and harlots, is it? We all go around doing this sometimes when we compromise our good, where we give in to our appetites, our desires, yes? But there's an inkling of something higher, isn't there? There's a spy. There's somebody looking. Have you ever seen the witness looking at you doing your stupidities? Have you ever noticed yourself catching yourself eating that second helping and knowing, maybe I really don't need to do this. My ego, my appetite wants to do it, but my higher self is saying, now, wait a minute. Not necessarily. Well, it's about time those spies came, baby. No, but those spies for all of us. I think the spies are those that spy out something higher for us. And if we're receptive to it, they protect us. They bring us up. The interesting thing about Rahab is she later married Salmon, whose descendant was Boaz. And Boaz's descendant was David. And David's descendant was Jesus. So there's the thread going through the Bible there of remembering that we are more than just our humanness. I am more than a compromised person. I am a beautiful child of God, right? That's the remembrance. Why the scarlet thread, folks? What's that about? Why scarlet? Interesting, isn't it? The Bible talks about the scarlet thread. I guess it was the red light district, so everything was red. So she had lots of scarlet. Yeah, it's the thread of sort of passion and a life, liveliness, isn't it? The red representing passion, life, connectedness. So I like that. It's almost like the umbilical cord, too, that connects us to spirit, right? We're always connected. Easy to see, too, okay. Right, scarlet is visible, okay. That's a good one, too, all right. So there's no mistake in it when the guys show up and going to destroy everything. Whoops, there's a scarlet thread.
Well, it's also like the lamb and the blood of the lamb.
So it represents blood as well, doesn't it?
Right.
Which is life, energy. Yeah, it's a similar one when they put the blood on the doorposts, right? So they wouldn't receive the curse of the plague when it came through back in Genesis. So a similar idea. Protection. We are divinely protected when we remember, even if it's just an inkling of our higher nature. That's what I'm getting from this. We are lifted up. And it doesn't matter what you are. You can be a prostitute. God can still work in your life. Yes? That's the message here. She was an uppity woman. She dared to claim her good. And we're uppity men and women today, aren't we? Because we dare to claim our good. Somebody had a T-shirt on at 9:30, and it said, nevertheless, she persisted.
Yeah.
And I like that, because that's what it's about, right? We persist in coming up higher. All right, let's move it on to the book of Judges. In the book of Judges, there's a number of judges that ruled Israel. They didn't have kings back then. They had these judges. And one of the judges was a woman, and interestingly enough, right? I think there are 12 judges. One of them was a woman. And Deborah was her name. She was a prophetess. She was a psychic. And she lived up in the mountains, in the woods, and she had a huge display of tarot cards. No, she didn't, but she would have if she'd been around now. In other words, she was open to what? She was a psychic, a prophetess. She was a seer. She was open to the intuitive. And that's another aspect of the feminine. You know, the masculine is so heavily involved in the intellect, isn't it? Working things out, controlling everything, yeah? Whereas the intuitive doesn't have to control everything. The intuitive taps into a higher wisdom, and so did Deborah. So Deborah, when they were battling, the Jews are always battling. Have you noticed this? When God isn't smiting, the Jews are battling. I mean, those are the two things that happen in the Old Testament. And they're always battling against lower forces. That's what it is. That's the metaphysics of it. But they're battling, and they need somebody to help them. Barak is the army captain, but he needs not just his power and force and intellect. He needs intuition. And so he goes into a compact with Deborah, and they overcome Sisera, the leader of the enemy camp. Now, Sisera is totally destroyed. His army's totally destroyed. He's on the run, right? So he runs headlong into the Israelite camp without knowing it, and he comes to a tent. He's thirsty. He's been running a long time. He says, give me a drink. There's a lady in there named Jael, and she says to him, listen, I'm not going to just give you a drink of water. I'll give you some soothing milk, and it's really soothing. It's so soothing he goes to sleep on the ground because he's exhausted. Well, he came into the wrong tent because she was a Jew, and she took a mallet, and she took a peg. Okay, and guess what she does next? She took a peg. Arr. She did the vampire thing. Instead of through the heart, she did it through the temple, through the third eye. And the Bible says it went straight through and into the ground. That's how much she was hammering, folks. Went all through her brain and into the ground. Now, that's juicy and nasty. And you could say, what the heck is the metaphysics of that, right? Are we encouraged to go and peg somebody like that through the head? Is that what we're supposed to do? I don't think so. I think it's not meant to be taken literally. It's meant to be taken metaphysically. So what are you doing when you've got somebody pegged? Or yourself pegged. You've seen the truth of something, haven't you? I've got this pegged. I'm not going there anymore. Have you ever had those times in your life where you realized, my ego is out of control. I'm going to peg it. I'm going to put it into the ground. Somebody said at 9:30 she was grounded. Yeah, right, she was grounded. He was grounded, excuse me. She grounded him. But she was grounded too, because this is all about us. She found the connection with spirit. She put her ego, represented by Sisera, to the ground, back where it belonged, right? So she could stand tall over it. Interesting, isn't it? Because he was a man of the intellect again. She was saying to her intellect, it only goes so far, there is a higher way, right? And interesting, right through the third eye there. So let that percolate, because it is hard to get our heads, it is hard to get our heads around it. So that's Deborah and Jael. Ruth, she was much calmer and nicer. You know, nothing bad happens, folks, in this one, okay? Naomi had left Israel because there was a drought, whatever. The crops weren't yielding. Went to Moab, and Ruth was a Moabite woman. They had a great connection, and when Naomi wanted to go back to Israel, Ruth said, I'm coming with you. So she was an alien coming into the country. She was an immigrant, right? So she followed something that she thought was a higher way. And when she got to Israel, though, things didn't work out necessarily very well. She didn't have any money, and she was gleaning in the fields that had already been harvested. She was just taking what was left on the ground, right? But she persevered. Nevertheless, she persisted until she married Boaz. There's Boaz again. And formed an alliance that prospered her. So she came into greater prosperity. So what's the message here? We welcome immigrants. Immigrants often work harder than the rest of us. Amen to that. They do, yes. They do the jobs that nobody else wants to do, and that's been famous for hundreds of years. The latest immigrants always do the most lowly jobs, right? Because they're grateful. They get more money here than they would have elsewhere, and they're willing to work those extra long hours and do the backbreaking work that we don't want to do anymore. But it's also the idea that we're willing to step outside of our comfort zone, right, our own little place that we know well, and go to a different environment, metaphysically here, and willing to step out beyond the comfort that I know about in order to do a new thing, right, to risk. That's part of being an uppity woman, isn't it? That's part of being attached, connected to the integration of masculine and feminine within us, is that I'm willing to do something risky and different. I'm not going to settle. I'm willing to stand out. And it's not a special person. It's the whole thread here. First one was a prostitute. The other one was a wacky psychic. The third one was an alien, right? So they're just ordinary people. Tell me more. She could have, yeah, she could have stayed where she was. Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly. But they were, the specific choice. Right. And they heard something, you know, she heard the spies speaking, Rahab. Ruth heard Naomi speaking about how that land was great and a wonderful place to live. So it's we hear these voices, we get these intuitions, there's something better for me. Let's move on to Esther. Say again. The courage to do it. Great courage. Excellent, excellent. And if you know your French, courage means what? I know it means courage, but what's the root of the word? With heart, right? With heart. So when you've got courage, you have heart. So it's not about head again. To have courage is to open your heart, to be intuitively aware of something greater. And that's beautiful because we're not saying there's anything wrong with intellect, but we have to marry the two together in order to have true success in our lives. Esther, I don't want to go into all details, it's a very complicated book, but basically, again, the Jews were threatened with destruction by Haman, who was working skillfully to try and overthrow the Jews. And Esther outsmarted him, basically. He even made the gallows ready for the Jews to be all hung on, and he was the one that ended up getting hanged. And so using her skill, using her ability to outwit. And this is another feminine quality, right, is the ability to think beyond just the problem at the level of the problem, look at it from a higher perspective, right? Even when that seems to be contradictory. I once went to a spiritual teacher, and one of the students said to him, he said, listen, you contradict yourself. I don't think I can trust you as my teacher, because you told one person to do one thing, and you told the other person to do the opposite thing. And the teacher looked at him and said, listen, if somebody's going left, I tell them to go right, so they end up in the right place. If somebody's going right, I tell them to go left, they end up at the center. So even though it appears to be contradictory, what I'm telling them is to get back on the center path. And I like that story because it tells us it's not as simple as just one easy answer for everybody, right? We have to use our intuition to know how to get back to center. And sometimes it might work for you a certain way, but it might work for me a different way, right? So we have to trust that. He's answering the person. He's seeing where the person is and what he needs to help him come back to center, right? So some of us, we might need more courage. Maybe some of us have got enough courage, we need something else, right? So everybody's different. You have to look into your heart and discover what is it that is mine. Okay, you like heads having trauma? Anybody into that? We loved that one, didn't we, the peg? No, well, too bad, because we got another one coming up, okay? This is Judith. Anybody read Judith? Judith is not in the Bible per se in the Old Testament. It's in the Apocrypha, which is tucked between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And Judith's a fascinating book. Judith, again, is a childless widow. We've got prostitutes, we've got prophetesses, we've got childless widows, right? People who are disempowered, who've lost their sustenance, who've lost their husbands. But she was very beautiful, she was very attractive, not just physically, but in all ways, was Judith. And, okay, here's the backstory. The King Nebuchadnezzar is having a bit of bother with some people in Persia. And he asked for some help from all his vassal states. But none of them seemed to respond, and the Jews ignored him. So he went off and destroyed the enemy. But then after they were destroyed, he said, wait a minute, there's some people here that didn't respect me. They didn't give me any respect whatsoever. Not even a little bit. Just a little bit. And he said, I'm going to destroy these people. So here we go again. The Israelites are about to be destroyed. So they send their best general, Holofernes, to do the deed. Well, of course, this perturbs the Israelites because there's no way they can win against the Assyrian host because they're such a powerful army. Until Judith comes forth. She steps forth. Again, she steps out with courage and she says, I got a plan. I'm going to go into the camp of the Assyrians and say that I'm going to convert to their way of thinking and their way of believing and insinuate myself into their camp in order to bring a good accomplishment for God. And we say, man, this is very risky. You sure you want to do this? She does it. She gets to the camp. As soon as they see her, they are enamored of her. I guess because she's so beautiful, they say, my goodness, we got to kill every single Jewish man because if the women are this hot, we don't want any competition. We'll keep all the women. And she is a prime example. And it says in the Bible that Holofernes, as soon as he saw her, he wanted to sleep with her. That was his prime intent because she was so beautiful. But they wined and dined her for a number of days, okay? And that's where we get to this point in the Bible. Let me read it. It's chapter 12 and then chapter 13, end of 12, beginning of 13. As Judith came in and took her place, Holofernes was beside himself with desire for her. He trembled with passion and was filled with an ardent longing to possess her. This is not a novel you can find in the drugstore. This is the Bible. Yeah. What was the name of that guy that used to have his picture on the front, you know? Fabio. Yeah, they should put Fabio on here. He trembled with passion and was filled with an ardent longing to possess her. Indeed, ever since he first set eyes on her, he'd been seeking an opportunity to seduce her. He said to her, drink and join in our merriment. Certainly I shall, my lord, replied Judith, for today is the greatest day of my life. Of course, he thought it was her greatest day because my Holofernes are about to have some sweet love with your baby. She thought differently. She knew that she was going to do a dirty on Holofernes. That way it was the greatest day. So there's a little bit of irony going on there. Then she took what her servant had prepared and ate and drank in his presence. Holofernes was entranced with her, and he drank a great deal of wine, more than he had ever drunk on any single day in his whole life. That's a lot of wine because you know the guy enjoyed partying. Obviously, he'd been partying for the last 3 or 4 days. So he was totally roaring drunk. He was on a roll. He was on one of these long benders. He was on a bender. When it grew late, Holofernes' servants made haste to withdraw because the time had come. And Bagoas closed the tent from outside, shutting out the attendants from his master's presence, and they went off to their beds. The banquet had lasted so long that they were all exhausted. Judith was now alone in the tent, with Holofernes lying sprawled on his bed, dead drunk. Judith had told her maid to stand outside the sleeping apartment and wait for her to go out, as she did on other days. She had said that they would be going out to pray and had explained this to Bagoas also. When all had left, and not a soul remained. Judith stood beside Holofernes' bed and prayed silently. He'd obviously passed out, right? Oh Lord, God of all power, look favorably now on what I am doing to bring glory to Jerusalem, for this is the moment to come, for you to come to the aid of your heritage and to prosper my plan for crushing the enemies who have attacked us. She went to the bed rail beside Holofernes' bed, reached down for his sword, and drawing close to the bed, she gripped him by the hair. Now give me strength, O Lord God of Israel, she said, and struck at his neck twice with all her might and cut off his head. She rolled the body off the bed and removed the mosquito net from its posts. Quickly she came out and gave Holofernes' head to her maid, who put it in the food bag. I think it was an Albertson's food bag. Then the two of them went out together, and they, as they always did when they went to pray, they passed through the camp with their Albertson's bag with a head in it, and went round the valley and up the hill to Bethulia, the city, till they approached its gates. Now the Bible goes on to say, because their great general had been decapitated, the army was kind of dismayed, and it was easy for the Jews to overwhelm them, and there was a great victory, end of the book. But what the heck does it mean for us today? Because we're not supposed to go around chopping off people's heads, carrying them around in a bag, are we? That we would be psychopaths if we did that. So there's got to be a deeper meaning. It's a metaphysical meaning. What is it? What's going on here? Do I have the courage to do what? Well, in this case, it's cutting off a head. So what's the head? What's the head represent? All our problems, our thinking, our control issues, our intellect, our ego, right? Who think they're so powerful, potent, who always are giving into their appetites, yeah? Having that extra help in, yeah, because I'm Holofernes, I can do what I like. That Holofernes character, that ego character, but it's got a fatal flaw, and that it gives in to its appetites, right? It loses sight of its spiritual identity, and the message the Bible's telling us is we got to have control over it. It doesn't have control over us. So we have to chop the head off of this multi-headed monster that's always coming at us, you know? Those desires, appetites, fears, human needs, anger. Aren't they all represented by this head? It's got to go, yeah? Well, what do you do with it after it's been chopped off? What's going on there? Begin to lead from your heart. That's what happens, right? All the way through this, Judith was always praying to God. So she's remembering the source of her good, right? All through this. Is this weird? Is this a little weird? But it's the Bible, so shut up. You have to get on with it. I didn't make it up. It's in there. There's a lot of weird stuff. You know, at the end of the 9:30 service, I thought, oh, my God, this is a workout. You know, trying to explain all this metaphysically. And then somebody said, no, you did okay. So be of good cheer. Do it again at 11. Okay. So, but, you know, I love to do metaphysics that is easily fits into our understanding, you know, easily aligned. When you come to the Bible, there's so many stories you think, man, I got to squeeze metaphysics out of this dead head, you know. But I think that's what it's saying, though, is that I've got to overcome the seeming forces that seem overwhelming in my life, right? It's just like David and Goliath. It's the same idea, isn't it? The forces that would appear to overwhelm me are nowhere near as powerful as they think they are because they are based on lower values. They are based on ego desires and needs. Truth will always prevail, right? The spirit will always come forth. But it's the spirit that's allied with our intuitive wisdom, with our courage, with the heart that does it. So, wrapping it up, putting it all together in a bag and sending it forth. What are we learning from today's message? One thing you could take with you into the week that you didn't know before, and maybe you don't want to ever know again either. Don't get too drunk on a date. We can all rise up no matter where we are, right? There's no, God is no respecter of persons here. He can come to a prostitute. He can come to a widow. He can come to a queen like Queen Esther. He can come to an alien in a foreign land. He could come in any way possible. It can come to a widow. Right, it comes in various ways, doesn't it? There's no one way. Trust it to be perfect for you, folks. Don't be afraid to ask God to help you, right? To get you past your ego. Yeah, good one. Yeah, have the courage to take a leap of faith. There we go. Very good. To a new life, to a new understanding. Yes. Women understand the male ego and its vulnerability. Careful now. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's it. I agree with you, baby. And what's more, no sheets either. You know, I'm lying there totally naked. No head, no sheets, nothing. It's not about male or female. It's about masculine and feminine within all of us, right? That's the key here. And to laugh about it, to understand it, the ego, the humanness, Holofernes doesn't laugh very much unless he's totally drunk and laughing at all of the excesses he's done. But the spirit within us is always buoyant and filled with laughter and joy because we remember what's possible for us. We are beautiful, beloved children of God, right? And God will always bring us forth to victory. That's Uppity Women of the Bible, part one. Join in next week, part two. Whew. All right. So we take time in meditation to come closer to those qualities we've just talked about, to not think it through, but to allow the wisdom to express. Because thinking can only get us so far. There are deeper and higher realms of endeavor. Those realms are symbolized through that feminine, receptive, intuitive, very skillful way of seeing. We are called to that higher way. Whoever we are, in whatever circumstance we find ourselves in, God will inform us, provide us with strength, courage, and wisdom. And we can use those qualities to approach situations at work, at home, on social media, in a different way, not the same old way of reacting to things. But to find the right and perfect way for this particular situation. Sometimes it's willingness to do a new thing. Sometimes it's nailing it, calling it forth, calling it out. Sometimes it's the courage to do the most difficult thing. So in the silence now, just for a moment, call forth how strength, courage, and wisdom can serve you in this coming week. So from the silence of the receptive heart comes forth the guidance we need. So we are wise to take time in the stillness to hear the messages that come and to act accordingly. As we do so, we move into a very productive, successful week. For all this, we thank you, dear Father, Mother, God, and so it is.
Thanks for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We sincerely thank you for your contribution, and we affirm with you, divine love through me blesses and multiplies all that I have, all that I give, and all that I receive, and I am grateful.